Gaze must have betrayed her thoughts as he sits upright and moves across the bed towards her.
No pressure,
he says, taking her hands inside his.
No big deal, just a nice night out because we deserve it, okay?
She doesn't have the energy to counter, so she nods and forces a smile, and she thinks that she will cross that bridge when she gets to it. And at least this way, she won't be living on her nerves expecting the proposal any moment. At least this way, she has some breathing space, some time to prepare. And then he kisses her hands before letting them go again.
I'll leave you to get on with it, he says. I'll do Noah's tea, yeah?
She nods.
Yes,
she says.
Yes, please. Thank you.
He leaves the room, pulling the door closed quietly behind him, a gesture so incredibly unlike Zack, who usually engages inanimate objects forcefully and noisily, that it chills her to the bone. The following day at college, she finds Scarlett at lunchtime. She takes her to the path at the back of the art block and says,
I think Zack is going to propose to me.
What?
He bought me a ring. I found it in his pocket. And now he wants to take me out on a date next week. And he's being just super nice and attentive and sweet.
Oh, fuck, Lula.
What are you going to do?
Please tell me you're going to say no.
Of course I'm going to say no. Of course I am. But then what? He'll go mental. He'll threaten to take Noah away from me. He'll make my life hell. The only reason he's being so nice is so that I'll say yes. Or that if I say no, he'll be justified to go nuts.
It doesn't matter, Scarlett says, clasping Tallulah's arm.
It does not matter what he says, or what he thinks, or how he reacts. You owe him nothing. That baby is yours. Your destiny is yours. He'll just need to accept that no means no and move on.
Tallulah nods, but she's not convinced. Noah is hers, but he's Zack's too. And Zack is the sort of father that a boy should grow up around. Physically affectionate, loving, hardworking, loyal, reliable, a good role model. For a crazy moment, she wishes Zack were more like the young deadbeat dads beloved of the tabloid press, the ones who spread their seed and move on, the ones who forget birthdays and don't turn up for access visits. She'd have no qualms about keeping Noah out of his life then. She wouldn't feel guilty about forcing them to live apart, for whittling Zack's relationship with his son down to rushed weekend visits in a lonely flat.
But what if he can't move on? She says. What if he doesn't take no for an answer? What if he makes a scene? What if no one never forgives me? What if I regret it?
Regret it?
Scarlett repeats incredulously.
How on earth would you regret not marrying a guy you don't love? Who wants to trap you in a box somewhere? Are you mad?
Tallulah shakes her head.
No, but it's just, I don't know. Think how many women, girls, would love the chance to be a proper family. Would love a guy who's prepared to put his family before everything. And if I say no, that would be like saying no to some people's dream.
Yes, but not your dream, FFS. Not your dream, Tallulah.
Scarlett looks hard at her.
What do you want? What's your goal in life? Once you finish college? Once your baby's at nursery? Where do you picture yourself?
Tallulah raises her gaze to the sky. She can feel herself start to bubble up somehow, like treacle in a pan, just on the edge of burning. Overhead, a fat white cloud passes slowly across the sun. She stares into the heart of it, where the sun burns a pale hole through it. She clenches her hands into fists and then relaxes them again. It's a question she's always been too scared to ask herself. All her life, she's been passive. Her school reports always said she was a good student, but that the teacher would love to see her contribute more to lessons, would love to hear her voice. At primary school, she allowed herself to be subsumed into friendship groups with children she didn't really like. And then she'd met Zack at a difficult age, an age where her contemporaries were stressing about Saturday night plans failing to materialise, about boys not replying to their messages quick enough or female friends talking shit about them behind their backs. Having a steady boyfriend had just allowed her to get on with studying, get on with life, get on with putting one foot in front of the other, mindlessly, unthinkingly, day after day after day. until the day she'd realised she hadn't had a period for over a month, and she'd bought a test from the internet and taken it on a Tuesday morning just before school at the beginning of her second year in the sixth form, and seen the two lines and immediately taken another test and thought, well, there it is. I'm pregnant. She'd mentally calculated a due date that was well beyond the date of her last A-level exam and thought, maybe I should just have it. Because that was the sort of girl Tallulah was. Her mother might have blessed her with the name of a rebel and a river and a film star, but she had failed to live up to it. She had failed to do anything genuinely proactive. Until the moment she had leapt across Scarlett's kitchen that morning after their sleepover and kissed her. It was, she knew, the only moment in her entire life that she had made happen. She takes her gaze from the sky and directs it back at Scarlett.
I don't know,
she says, her voice an apologetic whisper. Do you want me? She nods, but she can't quite bring herself to say the word yes. What else do you want?
Noah.
And?
I don't know, I just want to be free.
Yes, says Scarlett. Yes, exactly. That's exactly what you want. Of course it is. You're 19, you're beautiful, you're good. You want to be free. And having a baby shouldn't stop you being free. Being with me shouldn't stop you being free. Nothing should stop you being free. The last thing you want at this point in your life is a ring on your finger. You need to cut yourself away from him. And maybe this is the perfect opportunity. Let him propose, say no. It's kind of uncomebackfromable. It's a one-way exit. Seriously, let him do it. Say no. Then your life can begin. Tallulah has been nodding harder and harder as Scarlett talks. As she finishes, Tallulah feels a surge of electric energy pass through every element of her being, and she pushes herself towards Scarlett, presses her against the wall, and kisses her hard. After a minute, she pulls back breathlessly. She stares at Scarlett, at the bright lights dancing behind her eyes, at the glazed wonder on her face, feels the heat of Scarlett's caught breath against her skin, feels dazzled, beyond anything, beyond words, beyond imagination, by the beauty of her, and thinks, I love her, I love her, I love her.
I wish,
she says, tracing her fingers around the contours of Scarlett's face.
I wish that Zack didn't exist. I wish he would just, you know, disappear.
Chapter 46, September 2018. Kim watches Sophie flying around the internet, her fingertips clicking lightly across the keyboard, chasing this person called Cherry. Cherry, Sophie is saying. It's got to be Scarlett, hasn't it? Kim stares at her blankly. Red, says Sophie. They're both red.
Oh, God, says Kim, realization dawning. Of course. Shall we say something to Dom?
Sophie sighs. I don't know. The police are using their own techniques to locate Scarlett and her family. Maybe we should just stick with this for a while. Keep out of their way. Kim nods. She feels instinctively that Sophie is right. Sophie scrolls through the Instagram accounts of the main players again. Liam, Lexi, Mimi, Scarlett. Then she scrolls through the Instagram accounts of people who have commented on or liked anything on their Instagram accounts. She mutters the word cherry repeatedly under her breath as she does so, and then suddenly she stops.
Look,
she says, look. She angles the screen towards Kim and points. Whose account is this? Asks Kim. Ruby Reynolds, Rue, one of the Scarlett Jacques clique. She still lives in the area, according to the photos, look. She clicks on a photo of a dark-haired girl standing by a tree, wearing a battered leather jacket over a short dress. That's just over there, isn't it? Sophie gestures towards the village. On the common? Yes, says Kim, peering closer at the photo. Yes, just to the left of the duck pond. This was posted only 10 days ago. And look. She jabs the screen with her finger. Someone called Cherry Jack has liked it. Cherry Jack. Scarlet Jax. The icon is a photograph of two red cherries hanging off a stalk and a tongue poking at them. The tongue is pierced. Sophie glances at Kim. Scarlet has a pierced tongue, she says breathlessly. I spotted it on another photo on Liam Bailey's account. Sophie clicks on the profile picture and an account comes up. Amazingly, it's not private. No followers, she says. That's weird. She scrolls down through the photos, faster and faster. The girl called Cherry Jack appears to live on a boat. The shots are abstract, sunsets over endless ocean, the frothy tips of waves, the gleaming nub of a dolphin's beak held in the palm of the photographer's hand, tanned legs outstretched on cream leather with a dog's large paw resting on her calf. Kim peers more closely at the photo of the legs.
Can you zoom in on that? She asks.
Sophie enlarges the image and Kim stares at it. There, she says.
There on her foot, look, can you see it? That black smudge, look.
Sophie nods.
Is that?
Yes, that's where the tattoo was, the TM tattoo.
Oh my God, she says. This is Scarlet. This is Scarlet Jax. What dates are these photos from?
Sophie scrolls quickly through them. The latest one is dated the previous day, the oldest one just 2 weeks before. Kim pulls back from the screen and exhales. Scarlet Jax is on a boat. She's on a boat with her dog and her phone and her perfectly pedicured feet, posting pretty pictures to Instagram. She feels a wave of hot anger pass through her, and she swallows it down. They both turn back to the screen, and Sophie clicks on all Cherry Jack's images in turn. Each has a handful of likes, and Sophie clicks on the profiles of every user.
Recognize any of these people? She asks Kim.
No, says Kim.
But then they both stop and draw in their breath hard when they scroll down to a name that is familiar to both of them. @LexiGoes. Chapter 47, June 2017. Tallulah sits at her dressing table. Zach isn't back from work yet. He's due in an hour. Noah is downstairs with her mum, who just sent her upstairs to get ready.
Go on, she said. Take some time for a proper pamper. It's been so long since you went anywhere.
Her end-of-year exams are done. In a few weeks' time, it will be the end of the summer term, and there will be a long expanse of freedom ahead of her. And tonight, Zach will propose to her, and she will say no, and that will hopefully, finally, draw a line underneath this teenage romance that has dragged on for far, far too long. She hears her mother singing songs to Noah downstairs and she smiles. She wants to have this house back to herself. She wants to have her room, her bed back to herself. Just her, her mother, her brother, her baby. And then somewhere, somehow, she wants to fit Scarlet into her life. She can't quite picture it. There are gay people in Upfield Common. The male teachers from Maypole House who share a tiny cottage just past the Swan and Ducks and walk their rescue greyhound together at the weekends. Gia, a girl Tallulah went to school with and always wanted to be friends with because she was so cool, who now walks around the village hand in hand with an older woman who runs mindfulness courses in the village hall once a week. It wouldn't be hugely controversial in the context of where Tallulah lives, but it would be hugely controversial in the context of Tallulah's own existence. She's not sure she could be open about it yet. She's not sure she could cope with the second glances and the dropped jaws and the sense that she was a news story of some description. If it happened, it would have to happen so slowly that no one would really notice. But for now, she has a night at a pub to look forward to, a night she now realises that her whole future hinges on, where her destiny will pivot from one outcome to another. She sighs and untwists the wand of her mascara. She wants to look pretty, not for Zach, but for Scarlet, who will also be in the pub tonight, who said she will keep an eye on her in case things go horribly wrong, in case Zach loses his shit, in case Tallulah needs her. She layers the mascara twice onto her eyelashes and then plays with her hair. Scarlet says she envies Tallulah's hair. Scarlet's hair is sparse and damaged by years of continual bleaching and colouring. She takes Tallulah's hair in her fist sometimes and runs her hand down it and says,
"What is it like to have all of this? How can you bear being so beautiful?"
And Tallulah just smiles and says,
"Good genes, I guess. My mum's got lovely hair, and my dad. And your baby. And my baby, yes. There's lots of good hair in my family. You're so lucky."
Scarlet will reply, "Imagine being me for just a minute and having to make do with this." And she'll tug at her damaged hair and make noises of disgust, and Tallulah will say,
"But it doesn't matter. It's just hair. You're still the most beautiful girl in any room you're in, and you know it."
"I'm not beautiful," she'll reply. "My mum is beautiful, but I, unfortunately, look like my dad."
Tallulah once said, "Do you think I'll ever meet your parents?"
And Scarlet had nodded and said, "Of course you will."
"Will they think I'm right for you? I mean, I guess they're used to you being with people more like you, you know, people with money."
"Look," Scarlet replied, "my parents are so wrapped up in themselves and their own pathetic lives that I could bring a fucking horse home and they wouldn't even notice.
Seriously? They don't notice anything I do.
Ever. What about your mum?" she countered. "Do you think I'll ever get to meet her?"
Tallulah nodded. "Yes," she said. "Yes, 100%. My mum is so cool, and all she wants in the whole world is for me to be happy. So if you make me happy, she'll like you."
The conversation at the time had felt slightly fanciful. There seemed to be so much ground to conquer before they could reach the sunlit meadows of their happy ever after. But now it's here, the night where everything changes. She combs her hair into two sections and plaits it. She chooses a light and airy muslin top that falls flatteringly over her belly, and she teams it with cut-off denim shorts. She looks at the girl in the full-length mirror. The girl looks back at her. She is a strong woman, a gay woman, a mother, a future social worker. She is more than she always thought she was, so much more. It starts here, Tallulah thinks, holding in her stomach, patting at the fabric of the summer smock, imagining the new life she will have on the other side of tonight, when she is free and can do what she wants. All of it starts here. She goes downstairs to sit with Noah and her mother while she waits for Zach to get home from work. Chapter 48, September 2018. Kim and Sophie head across the school grounds towards the accommodation block. Sophie has her laptop pinned beneath her arm. Kim taps in Kerri-Anne Mulligan's apartment number and a female voice responds.
"Hi, Lexi, it's me, Kim. Can I come in, do you think? Just for a minute?"
Yeah, sure.
The lock buzzes and they push open the gate and head towards the lift. "Shall I do the talking?" Kim asks Sophie. "Yes," says Sophie. "Definitely, definitely you." Lexi meets them at the door to her apartment. She's barefoot in patterned leggings and a hoodie. She looks from Kim to Sophie and then questioningly back at Kim. She says,
"Oh, hi,"
before holding the door open for them and leading them into the living area. The sofa is pulled out into a bed and her suitcase is on the floor by its side, with clothes spilling out of it.
"Sorry," she says, "I haven't unpacked yet. I'm a bit of a nomad. I'm so used to living out of a suitcase, you know."
She kicks some clothes away with her bare foot and says,
"Let's sit at the breakfast bar."
They perch themselves on the bar stools lined up in front of the kitchenette, and Lexi turns to Kim and says,
"Everything okay?"
Sophie throws Kim an encouraging look that she hopes conveys the fact that she is here if Kim needs backup.
"Well, no,"
Kim replies, opening up her laptop.
"Not really. It's all been a bit unsettling, all this business with the signs and the things being dug up. Got me raking everything up, all the stuff that's been racing around my head since Tallulah went, and then Sophie found a video online posted by that girl who was there that night, Mimi. Remember Mimi?"
Lexi nods, then she says,
"Yeah, well, sort of. I mean, it all feels quite
blurry now, but I do remember there was another girl there. Anyway, this girl, Mimi, in the video she made, she seemed to know what was happening here at the school. Which is strange, as the only people who know what's happening here are the people who actually live here. So it looks like someone in the village has been in touch with Mimi, or maybe even been in touch with her the whole time. Kim pauses and Sophie sees something pass very quickly across Lexi's face, too fleeting for her to get a grip on it. Anyway, Kim continues, that set me off thinking. So I came over to see Sophie and we've just been going through all the social media again, but this time from the starting point of this Mimi girl, and it led us to an Instagram account for a girl called Cherry Jack. Kim pauses again, and this time the startled look that crosses Lexi's face is more pronounced. But the expression passes quickly, and she gives her head the tiniest of shakes before nodding and saying, right, okay. So this appears to be Scarlett Jacques on a boat, and look. Kim turns the screen slightly to face Lexi. Here, on this post from just last month, you've liked it, from your account. Another pause follows, and now the atmosphere is so thick with Lexi's discomfort that Sophie can almost touch it. That is you, isn't it? Lexi goes, yes?
Well, yes, says Lexi. Yes, that's my account, but I have no memory of ever liking that post, and I have no idea who this Cherry Jack is. I mean, how do you even know it's her?
Well, says Kim, first there's the name, Cherry Jack, Scarlett Jacques, then there's the dog. Look, not too many dogs have paws that huge, and the Jackses had that big dog, didn't they? And then there's this. She zooms in on Scarlett's foot. This tattoo, which I saw with my own eyes the day after Tallulah disappeared.
Honestly, Lexi cuts in. Honestly, Kim, I don't even follow this account. Look.
She switches on her phone and starts scrolling and touching the screen.
Look.
She turns her phone to face them.
Look, I hardly follow anyone, see? And there's no Cherry Jack here. Seriously, I don't know why that photo was liked by my account.
Sophie gazes at Lexi. She seems incredibly genuine, highly believable. But then this is the same Lexi who lets her Instagram followers believe that she lives in a huge Georgian manor house. The same Lexi who told the police that she saw the second dig here sign from her terrace when she couldn't possibly have. You don't have to follow an account to like someone's post, Sophie says measuredly. You just have to know it's there. Does anyone else have your login? Asks Kim. Lexi shrugs. Well, my mom does. I sometimes ask her to reply to some of my comments when I'm travelling or can't get to them.
Your mom?
Yes. She looks from Sophie to Kim and back again.
Well, obviously it's not my mum.
Sophie inhales sharply. But your mum was friends with Scarlett, wasn't she?
I guess, but there's no way my mum would know where Scarlett is now. There's no way she'd have found her on Instagram.
Why not? Sophie asks simply.
Because that's just weird. Why would she still be in touch with Scarlett?
Sophie sighs. I don't know, she says. But from what I've heard about Scarlett, she was a charismatic young woman. She had a lot of admirers. There was her little clique of friends, Liam. Her ex-head, Jacinta Croft, said she had a way of managing people, manipulating them. And now it looks like maybe Tallulah and Scarlett weren't as unacquainted as Scarlett might have led everyone to believe. So it is possible that your mum stayed in touch, behind the scenes. Lexi is already shaking her head, even before Sophie has finished talking.
Nope, she says. No, you're barking up the wrong tree. Totally.
Sophie smiles at her sadly. Lexi, she says, you're not here very much. Your mum lives here alone nearly all the time. Who knows what she does when she's on her own? She's a very caring woman. It wouldn't surprise me in the least if she was still in touch with Scarlett Jacques. Lexi doesn't reply this time. She says,
so what are you going to do? Are you going to ask her?
Sophie and Kim exchange a look. Kim nods and says, yes, we'll probably have a little chat with her.
She won't know anything, Lexi says. I promise you she won't.
Sophie closes her laptop then and is about to pick it up and leave when her eye is caught by something poking out from the half-disgorged contents of Lexi's suitcase. It's a copy of her book. Chapter 49, June 2017.
You look gorgeous, says Zach, appearing in the kitchen a while later. Look at you.
He grins at Kim and says, your daughter is properly hot. And Kim laughs and looks at Tallulah indulgently and says, well, she's the prettiest thing I've ever seen.
Zach approaches Tallulah and kisses her gently on her cheek. Then he grabs Noah from his high chair and twirls him around the kitchen until Noah is helpless with laughter. Zach's energy is off the scale, high octane, almost infectious. Almost, but not quite. Tallulah forces a smile as Zach passes Noah into her arms and says, I'm off for a shower. Won't be long.
When he's gone, Tallulah's mum looks at her and says, well, someone's in a good mood.
Yes, she replies. He is a bit.
Nice to see him so happy. He seemed a bit, you know, preoccupied lately with the flat. Tallulah nods but doesn't reply. So tonight, any particular reason for it?
No,
she replies airily.
No, I just think he was getting bogged down in saving up and wanted a break from it all.
Well, you both deserve it, says her mum. The two of you are incredible, so hard-working and selfless. It's about time you put yourselves first for a bit and went out and had some fun.
Are you sure you'll be all right getting Noah down? He's been a nightmare lately.
I'll be fine, her mum reassures her. If the worst comes to the worst, we'll just stay up late. It's the first time I've babysat for ages. I don't care how challenging it is. I just want you to have a wonderful, relaxing, possibly exciting... She throws Tallulah a mischievous look. Night out. I don't want you to think about Noah or me or anything that isn't fun-related, okay? Tallulah wonders about her mother's use of the words possibly exciting and the strange look she'd thrown her. Does her mother know, she wonders. Has Zach told her? Or, God, heaven forbid, maybe even asked her permission. The thought freaks her out. But she smiles and says,
okay, I promise not to think about my mother or my child.
Good girl. Her mother throws her another indulgent smile. Good girl. And if you've got a hangover tomorrow, just stay in bed. I'll do the morning for you too, okay? Tallulah nods, then places Noah back in his high chair and holds out her arms towards her mother and says,
hug.
Her mother smiles and says, oh, yes, please. And they hug, there, in the kitchen, the sun shining on them from the garden. Zach singing in the shower overhead, Noah chewing thoughtfully on the corner of a book and watching them curiously, almost sagely, as if he knows that this is a night that will shape his destiny. At the very thought of it, Tallulah feels a tear roll down her cheek. She wipes it away quickly so that her mother doesn't notice. Chapter 50, September 2018. It's 4 o'clock. Kim left Maypole House 2 hours ago to collect Noah from nursery, and now Sophie pulls on a cardigan, grabs her phone and heads out into the grounds. Classes are over for the day, and the paths swarm with teenagers. She imagines these same paths swarming with Scarlett's cohort. She pictures tall, lean Scarlett, as Liam described her back then, with her hair a natural dark brown, a mini dress, opaque tights and clumpy boots, followed by her adoring coterie. And then she pictures Scarlett on a boat, her bleached hair burning blonder in the sun, sitting with her dog, posting abstract photos sporadically, possibly strategically, for a handful of people to see, so that they know she is still alive. But what of Tallulah? What of Zach? And what, she wonders, of Jacinta Croft's husband? Her thoughts spiral as she walks. A few students smile and say hello. She returns their greetings, blankly. She has no idea who they are, but they know that she is Mr. Gray's girlfriend, and no doubt, by now, they know she is a published author too. She has an ephemeral, slightly elevated status here, which she finds somewhat unsettling. She sits on a bench in the cloisters and she Googles Cherry Jack on her phone. It brings up dozens of hits for a cherry-flavoured rum from the Virgin Islands. It also brings up at least half a dozen social media accounts for other users calling themselves Cherry Jack. She clicks the Google filter to images and scrolls through them. She finds endless photos of rum and rum-based cocktails and boys called Jack Cherry, but nothing that looks anything like Scarlet Jack's. She glances up as she feels someone approach. It's Liam. She smiles and says, "Just the man."
"Am I?"
he says. "Yes, I wondered if you're not busy, if we could have a chat."
"Of course,"
he says.
"Sure. Here or..."
"I don't mind."
"I mean, you could come up to my room. I was on my way there. I have cold beers."
She nods and smiles. "Sure," she says. "That would be great." Liam's room is nothing like Carrie Anne's. It's a rectangular box with a bed on one side, a sofa on the other, sliding doors directly onto a small balcony and a tiny kitchen tucked away inside an alcove.
"Snug," she says, running her eyes instinctively across his bookshelf as she walks past it.
"Yes,"
he says, pulling off his jacket and hanging it from a knob by the front door.
"Small, but big enough, you know. Here."
He moves some paperwork from the arm of the sofa and invites Sophie to take a seat. The room is neat and fragrant, filled with the clutter of his life, but in a way that seems very organised.
"So?"
he says, going to his fridge.
"How's your day been?"
"Kind of weird," she replies. "I've spent most of it with Kim Knox, you know, Tallulah's mum. We've been trying to find Scarlet Jack's online." He takes two beers from the fridge and passes her one. She glances again around Liam's room. He has some interesting art on his walls, the most overpowering of which is a large canvas portrait. She narrows her eyes to make sense of it and sees that it is a rather jumbled painting of what appears to be a young woman sitting on a throne with a dog by her side. And then the pieces fall into place, and she points at the painting and says, "Is that?"
"Yes, that's Scarlet. A self-portrait. She gave it to me."
"Is it okay if I have a look?"
"Of course,"
he says.
"Be my guest."
She rests her beer on the coffee table and walks towards the painting. As she gets closer, more and more detail reveals itself. Both Scarlet and the dog are wearing crowns. Scarlet looks slightly imperious, her hands spread out upon her open knees, each finger sporting a huge golden ring picked out in shiny metallic paint. There are various things on tables in the background, including a throbbing heart on a platter and a cake slice dripping with blood.
"Bloody hell,"
she says.
"This is, odd." "Yeah, it is,"
he shrugs. "What does it all mean? The heart, for example. What do you think that represents?"
"She never really explained any of it to me, to be honest. She just turned up with it one day and asked if I wanted it. And I said yeah, because I knew it would look really cool in here. And also because, you know, it was nice to just have a bit of her."
He trails off slightly. "You know," she begins carefully, "I saw Jacinta Croft the other day and we were chatting about Scarlet and she told me how heartbroken you were after you split up." He nods just once and then takes a swig of beer.
"I guess I was," he says. "In a way. I mean, a girl like Scarlet doesn't come along very often, especially not for a guy like me. She made things feel kind of exciting. She made me feel like maybe I was special. Special because she chose me. You know? But..."
He sighs and rallies. "It is what it is. I'm over it now." "Anyone else on the scene?" she asks.
"No," he says. "No, not really. I mean, I'm on dating sites, so it's not as if I'm not actively looking. But I'm also not that bothered either, you know."
"So, you and Lexi..." He looks up at her smartly. He seems confused.
Lexi Mulligan? God, no. I mean, we're friends and everything. But no, not in that way. You know, I'm pretty sure she's not even straight. She had a big crush on Scarlett for a while. But anyway, no, not Lexi. Not anyone. Just me.
You know the other night when the police were here after they found the second dig here sign? He nods. Had Lexi been up here that night?
Here? You mean in my room?
Yes, in your room.
No, definitely not.
I actually don't think Lexi's ever been in my room. Can I go out on your balcony?
Sure,
he says.
It's not locked.
She slides the door open and goes to the edge of the balcony. She peers over and out towards the flower bed and she steps onto her tiptoes and leans out even further. And she realizes that even at this angle and at this height, she cannot see the spot where the dig here sign had been posted. She turns round and looks overhead, but there are no balconies above. Lexi had definitely been lying about seeing the dig here sign from her apartment. Or from anywhere for that matter. She knew about it not because she'd seen it, but because either she or her mother had put it there. Sophie walks back towards the sofa, but as she does so, her eye is caught by another painting on Liam's wall. It's a smaller canvas than Scarlett's self-portrait, but painted using the same strokes and the same jolting in-your-face colour palette. It's a stone spiral staircase, with the steps painted in garish rainbow shades, all blending and bleeding into one another, almost like melted wax. A pole of bright golden light beams down from a circular window at the top of the tower that the steps are housed in and pierces the stone floor at the bottom, creating a plume of purpley-grey smoke and sparks of glitter. Just to the side is another knife, again smeared with what looks like blood. What the hell is this one? Liam shrugs.
It's another one of Scarlett's. She painted it during her breakdown. She said she needed me to take care of it for her. For posterity.
But what's it of?
I don't really know. I mean, I know what it looks like. There's a staircase in her house, in the really old part of the building. It goes up to a kind of turret, with a tiny room at the top with a little slit eyes for arrows. They never used the little room. It was too small to put any furniture in.
Sophie stares at the painting hard, trying to divine some more meaning from it. Did she ever say anything about the room? She stands closer and peers at the detail. There's a kind of rectangle of light around the bottom step. It bleeds through a small gap. The blood from the knife trickles towards this gap and then disappears. As she stares at the knife, she notices that it's not actually a knife at all, that it has a bent end with a U-shape cut into it. It's not a knife. It's a lever. She feels her heart stop beating for a split second and then start again, twice as fast. Would you mind, she says, if I take a picture of this?
Sure,
he says casually.
Do you think it's a clue of some kind?
She nods. Yes, she says, her cool tone belying the electric instincts setting all her nerves on edge. I think it might be. Chapter 51, June 2017. The bright sun strobes through the willow hanks as Zach and Tallulah cross the common towards the pub. Zach takes her hand as they walk and keeps up a running commentary. He tells her about a guy at work who just got a rescue dog that can't bark, and another guy at work whose kid was arrested last week for vandalism, and he tells her about the possibility of a caravan in the New Forest that he might be able to borrow for a week off a friend of one of his sisters. They could go there for their summer holidays, maybe. And Tallulah nods and smiles and makes all the right noises because she has nothing to lose now by being nice to him. By the end of this evening, they will never hold hands again. He will never chat to her like this again. By the end of tonight, there will be a solid wall between them that will be, she knows, because it is how Zach works, absolutely unbreachable. So for now, while the sun shines and there is wine to be drunk and no more exams and a night out, why not be nice? Why not pretend that everything is fine? The garden at the front of the pub is packed. The Swan and Ducks is a destination pub, not just a local. People come from all the surrounding villages and hamlets, especially on a sunny Friday night in June. It's quieter inside the pub. The barman points out their table to them, and Tallulah catches her breath. There's a bottle of champagne chilling on the table in a chrome bucket and two champagne flutes.
Ta-da,
says Zack, leading her to the table. She goes to pull out her chair, but Zack intervenes and says,
No, allow me,
before pulling the chair out for her and then tucking her in on it. Tallulah smiles and says,
Wow, thank you, this is amazing.
The least you deserve,
Zack replies, pulling out his own chair and seating himself. Tallulah glances up at him. His face is soft, wreathed in smiles. He looks like the sweet lost boy who started secondary school halfway through, and she feels her resolve start to diminish.
We both deserve it, she says. It's been quite a year.
His smile falters then, and he says,
Yes, it really has been.
He turns to grapple with the champagne bottle.
Right, he says. Please don't let me fuck this up.
He eases the cork from the bottle, and Tallulah brings her flute close to the bottleneck, just in case. But the cork leaves smoothly, with a gentle pop, and Zack pours her a glass, and then himself, and then he says, raising his glass to hers,
To us, Zack and Tallulah, and to Noah, and the best little man in the world. Cheers.
Tallulah touches her glass against Zack's, and is grateful when he doesn't hold her gaze or expect her to reciprocate his sentiments in any way, and instead turns his attention to the paper menu in front of him.
Right,
he says.
Literally order anything, price no object, whatever you want.
She glances at the menu and sees a whole sea bass served with broccolini and pilau rice for £35. She gulps and says,
Well, I won't be having the sea bass.
Have the sea bass, says Zack. Seriously, have whatever you want.
I don't even like sea bass.
He rolls his eyes at her affectionately, and she sees his hand go to the pocket of his trousers as he's done a few times since they left the house. And she knows that that's where the ring is, and her mouth feels dry, and she thinks, Why is she doing this? Why has she let it get this far? She is going to humiliate him and crush him, and all of this, this golden summer night of champagne toasts and chivalry, will curdle into something unbearable and cruel. But no, she reminds herself, no. Tonight is not real. Tonight is a mirage. She reminds herself of the night she slept over at Scarlett's, the barrage of increasingly abusive messages and videos, the way he pressed his face so close to Noah's, using him to get to her, to scare her, to bend her to his will. She thinks of the feel of his finger under her chin, poking hard and deep into the softness there, forcing her to look him in the eye. She thinks of how he wants her to give up her college course, give up her friends, stay at home, save money, be a good mother. She thinks of how he has manipulated his way into still living in her home, still sharing her bed, and she thinks of how she let him, and she thinks, no, no, this can't be a kind split. This can't be ambiguous. This can't leave any room for anything but animosity and pain. Because Zack is a controller, and she has to show him that she cannot and will not be controlled, and that all the champagne and big, soft eyes and compliments and expensive fish in the world is not going to change that. She pulls in her breath to calm herself and looks down at the menu. As she does so, she hears a commotion at the door, the sounds of hooting laughter and loud chatter. She glances up and sees first Mimi, then Rue, then Jaden, then Rocky, with Scarlett and Liam bringing up the rear. Zack looks up and she sees displeasure register on his face. He hates the posh kids from the school across the common. He groans.
That's the end of the peace and quiet.
They head towards the bar, and Tallulah can feel Scarlett's eyes burning upon her, but she keeps her gaze fixed on the menu. The words swim before her meaninglessly. Cannellini, jus, anchovy, rigatoni, chorizo. She doesn't know what any of it means. She just knows that Scarlett is at the bar and Scarlett is looking at her. She feels her phone vibrate and glances at the message. Has it happened yet? No, she replies. I'm here if you need me. K.
Who's that?
Just Mum, she replies. Wants to know which pyjamas to put Noah in.
Zack smiles. Then he says, fancy sharing a seafood platter with me?
Oh, she says distractedly. Maybe. What's it got on it?
King prawns, smoked salmon, clams, potted shrimps and caviar. She glances at the price.
Are you sure?
Yes, he says. I told you, we're fine dining tonight.
Okay then,
she nods.
I mean, it's up to you. I don't really like caviar.
Zack laughs and says, don't worry, I'll eat your caviar. She smiles and takes a large sip from her champagne glass. Scarlett and her mates are still at the bar, putting in a long and very complicated order and asking for cash back and being generally loud and irritating. She glances up and catches Scarlett's eye very briefly. She can feel her face flush pink and she quickly looks away and says,
shall we order some fries?
Hell yes, says Zack. Triple cooked chips, French fries or truffle chips. Shall we just have one of each?
Yes,
she says, not really knowing what she's saying yes to. She has no idea what a truffle chip is.
Excellent,
he smiles and folds his arms. Tallulah can hear Scarlett from here.
Have you got any rum from Barbados?
She asks. It's called Mount Gay?
Afraid not. We've got Bacardi, Kraken.
Kraken will do, but you should really get some Mount Gay. It's like the best.
She sounds so posh, Tallulah thinks, so entitled. It's almost impossible to imagine her as she is when the two of them are alone together.
Christ, says Zack. Listen to them. Who do they think they are?
He impersonates Scarlett under his breath.
It's like the best.
Tallulah nods and says,
yeah, I know, they're really annoying.
Then she draws in her breath and says,
they go to my college. They're all studying art. I think some of them used to go to Maypole House.
That figures,
he says. Then he gets to his feet and says, I'm going to order. Want anything else to drink? She taps her fingernails against her champagne flute and says,
I'm good with this, thank you.
He throws her an indulgent smile, and then she holds her breath as he approaches the bar. He is standing inches from Scarlett, who has her back to him as she touches her debit card to the screen of a card reader. She waits for the receipt to roll out and then takes it from the barman.
Thank you,
she says. Then she picks up her drink and turns. And now she is face to face with Zack, and Tallulah can barely breathe.
Sorry,
she hears him say, bobbing to his right to let her pass. Tallulah sees her smile tightly at him and hears her say,
no worries.
As she passes Tallulah's table on her way back outside, Scarlett stares meaningfully at her. She touches her breastbone with a fist and blinks. Tallulah nods and then looks away. Adrenaline is pulsing through every part of her. She swallows down some champagne to distract herself from the horrible sensation of her heart pounding beneath her ribcage. Her phone buzzes. It's Scarlett. You okay? No, she replies. I feel sick. You can do this. I'm here. Tallulah types in a love heart and sends it, then turns off the screen and places her phone under the menu so that she can't look at it. Zack returns and takes his seat.
That's the girl, isn't it? From your selfie.
She arranges her face into an expression of confusion, but she can tell it's unconvincing.
Which girl?
The one with scraggy hair that was going on about rum. The one I saw you at the bus stop with that time.
Oh,
she replies lightly.
Yes, that's Scarlett.
How come she didn't come and say hello?
She shrugs.
Maybe she didn't see me.
He takes the champagne bottle from the bucket and tops them both up. Tallulah can tell that the atmosphere has already soured slightly, that a cloud has drifted across Zack's burning sun of optimism.
Yeah, he says. Maybe.
They chat for a while about Noah, about Zack's sister who's just fallen pregnant with her first child and thinks she might be having twins, but it feels to Tallulah that she is doing all the work, that Zack is elsewhere, and she knows where he is. He's inside his head, chewing over his brief exchange with Scarlett. Zack is very perceptive, and he will have picked up on her energy, and now he will be picking up on Tallulah's energy, and he will know that something is not quite right, but he will have no idea what it is. Their food arrives and it is quite a spectacle. A white platter laid upon a brass stand and strewn with shiny necklaces of samphire and ruby-red pomegranate seeds. They both say wow and grab cutlery out of a pot on the table, and then begin to dismantle the platter. But Tallulah has no appetite and takes an inordinate amount of time to unpeel a prawn.
Are you okay?
Asks Zack.
Yes,
she says.
I'm fine.
You're not really eating much.
It's just a bit fiddly.
Eat some chips.
He tips a pot of massive, oily-looking chips towards her, and she takes a few.
More,
he says, and that edges back in his voice. It is not a suggestion, but a demand. She takes a couple more, and he places the chips back on the table. Her phone vibrates and she angles it towards her to look at it. It's scarlet again. She sees the first few words of the message but doesn't open it. Do you need me? I can. Zack throws her a questioning look.
Mum again.
Oh, yes?
He says.
What does she want?
Just asking if we were having a nice time.
And?
He says.
Are we?
The question is loaded, and she waits a beat to reply.
Yes,
she says.
We're having a lovely time.
And she puts out her champagne glass to his and says,
Cheers.
She can feel the night crumbling. She can tell that small talk has become impossible, and that they will either sit here in silence or they will talk about them, and either outcome will ruin the evening. So she hands him a prawn and says,
Go on. Peel it for me, will you? I'm too lazy.
And she hits him with the best smile she can muster. He rolls his eyes affectionately and takes it from her, and for a moment it feels as if the cordial atmosphere might have been restored. But then her phone buzzes again, and he tuts and says,
Fuck's sake!
Probably my mum, because I didn't reply to her last one.
Well, go on then,
he says crossly, wrenching the head off the prawn. She switches on her screen and clicks on Scarlett's message. Then she types in quickly, He's in a bad mood. I don't think it's going to happen. Scarlett replies, Plan B. Tallulah takes a deep breath and types back, Yes, Plan B. Part 4. Chapter 52. June 2017. Scarlett strides into the bar, trying and failing to look natural and nonchalant. She stares hard at Tallulah, and Zack glances at her, then does a double take before looking at Tallulah, and she sees something fall into place. He turns to her and says,
What's going on?
What?
You and that girl.
I don't know,
she says.
Nothing.
Scarlett is heading towards them. She pulls across a chair from another table, sits down, sticks a chip into a dish of mayonnaise and eats it.
Hi, Lulah, she says. How are you?
Tallulah nods and says,
I'm fine. I'm sorry I didn't say hello earlier. You were with all your friends and I didn't want to interrupt.
Oh, it's fine,
Scarlett replies breezily, picking up another chip and sticking it back in the mayonnaise.
I understand. Anyway,
she waves her hand across the display of seafood and the champagne bucket.
Special occasion?
No,
says Tallulah.
Not really. We just haven't been out for a while.
Oh, that's nice.
She picks up a third chip and puts it to her nose.
Is this one truffled?
She asks. Zack nods stiffly and Scarlett says,
Nice,
before eating it.
I didn't quite catch your name?
She says to Zack.
It's Zack.
His face is brittle with rage. Scarlett is acting cool, but Tallulah can see the manic energy pumping through her. You know Tallulah from college? Zack says.
That is correct. Lovely, lovely Tallulah.
She never talks about you.
How rude!
Scarlett mocks a front and grabs another truffle chip.
She's got a photo of you on her phone, though.
Uh-oh,
says Scarlett, widening her eyes.
Stalker alert!
It's just that selfie from the Christmas party, that's all.
What selfie?
You don't remember taking it? Asks Zack.
I can't say that I do, but then I was off my face at the time. Anyway, she says, I don't want to disturb you two while you're having such a gorgeous romantic evening. Lovely to see you, Lula. Lovely to meet you, Zack.
No, says Tallulah. Stay.
Oh, she beams at Tallulah. Okay, then.
Zack looks as though he is about to say something, but then Mimi walks in, scanning the pub for Scarlet.
Oh, she says. There you are, we were wondering where you'd got to.
Sorry, says Scarlet. I got sidetracked into eating all of Tallulah and her boyfriend's delicious chips. Why don't you join us?
Within a few more minutes, Scarlet's whole crew is squashed around the table, and all the chips are gone, and all the prawns are gone, and someone has gone to the bar and come back with a round of tequila shots, and Jaden and Liam have cornered Zack into an intense conversation about football. And Tallulah is talking to Scarlet and Ruby and Mimi about weird teachers at college. A waiter appears and reaches through them to collect the empty plates and bowls and asks them if they want anything else to eat, and someone orders a sticky toffee pudding, and someone else orders more chips, and Tallulah has no idea who is paying for what or what exactly is happening. But it feels strangely like something, somewhere, is on fire, and it's already too late to put it out. More tequila shots arrive, as well as the extra chips and the sticky toffee pudding, which is served with 6 spoons, and Jaden gets a message on his phone and says,
He's outside. I'll be right back.
And everyone seems to know what he's talking about, and a couple of people pass him £10 notes from their wallets, and a moment later he returns and passes pills to his friends under the table. Tallulah watches Zack's reaction and is amazed to see him take a pill from Jaden and swallow it down with warm champagne. Zack has never taken drugs before, as far as she's aware, apart from smoking a little weed with his older sister in the back garden when she still lived at home. She gazes at him, trying to catch his eye, but he studiously ignores her, and Tallulah realizes that rather than trying to fight this situation that she and Scarlet have deliberately engineered, he is on some kind of mission. A mission to unnerve her, to undermine her, to catch her out somehow. He hates these kids. She knows he hates them. Yet he's sucking up to them and laughing at their jokes and taking their drugs. She feels something touch her hand under the table and looks up to find Scarlet looking at her.
I broke one in half for you, she says. Want to share?
Tallulah shakes her head.
A quarter?
Tallulah blinks and says,
Maybe later.
Scarlet passes her the tiny chunk and she clasps it inside her fist. The night has transmogrified into something alien and electric. She is being played from both sides, by Zack and by Scarlet. Meanwhile, the muscles of her heart ache for Noah. Lying now, she assumes, at nearly 10 p.m, sleeping in his cot, his hands furled into fists, his hair damp from the heat of his bedtime nap and warm milk, and the hot summer night air through the open window. Once again, she feels Scarlet's hand under the table, cupping her bare leg, a finger sliding up towards the hem of her cut-off shorts, and she gasps and jumps very slightly. She gets to her feet.
You know, she says, it's getting late. I should probably get back.
She doesn't want this to happen anymore. She's changed her mind. She wants to go home with Zack, tiptoe upstairs and stand with him staring at their baby together, talking in almost silent whispers about how beautiful he is and how lucky they are to have him. They can split up another day. Not today. Not now.
No,
says Scarlet, pulling her down by her arm. She fixes her with a terrifying stare and says,
Stay, please, stay. Just have one more drink, okay?
Tallulah sighs and someone brings her another tequila which she duly downs. She's about to try to leave again when someone else arrives at their table. It's a slightly older woman whom she vaguely recognises from around the village, and upon her arrival, Scarlet screeches,
Lexi!
She hugs the woman to her and says to Tallulah,
Lexi's Carrie Ann's daughter. You know the matron from the Maypole?
Not only has Lexi got the best mum in the world, she also has the best job in the world. Tell Tallulah what you do, Lex.
Lexi rolls her eyes good-naturedly and says, I'm a travel blogger.
Yeah, says Scarlett, but not some fake-ass travel blogger who tries to blag freebies at hotels. Like a proper blogger with thousands of followers on Instagram and a stupidly jet-set lifestyle. Where did you just get back from?
Peru.
Peru, fuck's sake. That is so cool, it's ridiculous.
Stuck now in conversation with Scarlett and Lexi, Tallulah gives in and has another shot of tequila when it's offered to her and uses it to swallow down the chunk of pill she still held in her hand. The bell is rung at the bar for last orders and Scarlett gets to her feet.
Anyone for a pool party?
She says loudly. Tallulah looks at Zack and Zack looks at Tallulah, a look filled with bad intentions. He says,
Count me in.
His pupils are dilated and he's smiling.
Come on, Tallulah, he says to her across the table. We're going to a pool party.
Chapter 53, September 2018. Sophie stands at the front door of the cottage, her hands clasped in front of her, her hair neatly combed, her teeth freshly brushed to take away the scent of Liam's beer. Pippa crunches across the gravel pathway holding a twin's hand in each of hers, each twin towing a small wheelie case behind them.
Hello, 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 says Sophie.
Welcome.
It's 6 p.m. and Sean is running late at school and has called Sophie in a frazzle of anxious apologies to ask her to be there when they arrived. She'd held back a long, deep sigh and said,
of course, no problem. I'll try and be there as quickly as I can, I promise.
It's fine, she said. Just do what you have to do.
Thank you, darling, he replied.
And she'd started, because he'd never called her darling before. He always called her Sophs or baby. Darling seemed to her like something you called a wife you run out of genuine enthusiasm for. Darling was what her friends' parents called each other. Darling was old. She moves towards Pippa and the children and leans down to hug them to her. They are both in Gap hoodies. Jack's is green and Lily's is baby pink. They hug her back hard and she feels a sense of relief because it's been so long since she's seen them and she'd been scared they might have forgotten that they like her.
Come in,
she says. Come in.
Is this really Daddy's house?
Asks Jack.
Well, sort of, Sophie says, holding the door for them to troop through.
It really belongs to the school, but they lend it to the head teacher for when they're working here.
So does Daddy still have his other house in London?
Asks Lily, wheeling her pink trunkie down the flagstones and towards the kitchen.
Yes, Daddy still has his other house and I still have my flat. We're just borrowing this cottage for a while.
It's nice,
says Jack, who likes most things.
It looks a bit spidery,
says Lily, who always finds something to mention.
I promise you, says Sophie, straightening their suitcases for them,
that I have cleaned every last inch of this cottage and there is not one solitary tiny weeny creature anywhere in it.
I don't mind other creatures,
says Lily.
I just don't like spiders. What's that smell?
What smell?
Like a burned smell.
Oh, God, I don't know. I thought I'd managed to get rid of it. I must have got used to it. Sorry, it's just an old house, I suppose.
She turns to Pippa.
Can I get you a cup of tea?
Pippa heaves a travel-weary sigh.
No, she says. No, very kind, but I'm expected for dinner in N5 at 8:30. I'm only just going to make it as it is. I must say, I'm not sure how tenable this is going to be as an ongoing thing. I mean, if Sean can't even make it back to a house that's actually in the same place as his school on time, how on earth is he going to get these children back and forth from N1 every other weekend? I can smell disaster already.
She angles her face slightly to the right, almost as if she is sniffing the air for the oncoming disaster, then checks her phone and says,
Jesus Christ, Google Maps is saying 2 hours and 5 minutes. Sean swore blind this drive was only an hour and a half.
She sighs and runs her fingers through her shiny chestnut hair. So, children, be good for Sophie and for Daddy. Make sure you do everything you're told.
Do you want to see their room? Asks Sophie.
No, she replies crisply.